From one islander to another, Isle of Wight Radio proudly presents John Hannam Meets.
Delighted to welcome back to John Hannam Meets the wonderful Tommy Cannon.
Hi, John.
Nice to see you. On your own for a change.
Yeah.
I must say, you are coming back, which is very exciting, to Shanklin Theatre on August the 31st.
Yes, we are.
With a show called The Dressing Room.
Mm.
So what's all that about?
There's when you go to a theatre or wherever you go and there's a full show on, there might be like a couple of comics, a singer or whatever. And what it is, it's the banter that goes on in a dressing room. Lots of things which we call, it's like a play variety, actually. And we do all the banter, and then suddenly the compere comes on, who's Stu Francis, and says, right, it's time to get the show going, boys, blah, blah, blah. And he butts in, and on goes Johnny Casson and does 20 minutes or whatever. And then after Johnny, it's the end of first half. Then second half, we're back in the dressing room and must say, oh, Johnny, that were marvellous. Oh, that or just don't know how lucky they are that they had you there and all that. And then Bob and I go on and we finish the evening off with about 25 minutes of actual cannon and ball.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Johnny Casson is a comics comic, isn't he?
Yeah. He's a very, very funny man, Johnny. He's such a nice lad as well. And that's what helps to make the show work, if you know what I mean. You all really need to be getting on. And Stu Francis is, you know, he's a guy that knits it all together because he's sort of like the compere, but he's the gay compere.
Oh, right.
Wears a gold suit, you know. Nice to see y'all. It's lovely to be here. Does all that business, you know. And we've got Anne-Marie, who's Johnny's girlfriend, and she is backstage management. So right. She comes on twice to say, I wear a wig in this first half because I don't think anybody's noticed that I've got a wig on, but it's the worst wig in the world, and I don't think anybody notices it, you know. So it's one of them. Yeah, so it's good, yeah, it's good.
You're coming south, Royal Hippodrome Theatre, Eastbourne, that's September the 1st.
Yeah.
White Rock Pavilion, Hastings the 2nd.
Yeah.
Tivoli Wimborne the 6th.
Yeah.
And the new Theatre Royal, which is a lovely theatre, September the 8th.
Yeah.
Now, I've enjoyed a show immensely recently on TV for several reasons. Every person in the show, I'd interviewed all nine of you.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, you're in Las Vegas. Yeah. And I thought it was fantastic entertainment.
Thank you, John. I mean, to be honest with you, it was a strange thing because we signed up to do it. And Bob and I both thought it was going to Vegas to do a variety show. So I thought we were going to go round all the shows, see how it all works and et cetera. And then about 3 weeks after we'd signed the contracts and everything, Phil phoned and he said, right, he said, the reality team that's going out with you. I said, sorry? He said, reality team. I said, what reality team? I said, what do you mean? He said, oh, he said, it's a reality show, but on the last night you're there, it's a big variety show to more or less. There were 10% English in the audience, but 90% were all Americans.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, right, okay. So, because we were expecting fireworks, because we're all in one big house, it was a massive mansion place.
Yeah.
And we thought, oh, here we go. We got there and they said, right, there are bedrooms for everyone. Go and find them. So everybody starts dashing around the other and everywhere, can't get a bedroom. Oh, and I thought, oh no, this is going to be 2 weeks of absolute purgatory. But it wasn't. Everybody got on. I can't think of an incident where anybody actually fell out. So the show's up for an award.
Should be.
For a reality show.
Yeah.
So if anybody watched the Vegas show and they liked it, get a vote in.
As long as someone had the biggest mirror in the room, he was happy, wasn't he, Jess Connor?
Oh, Jess. Lovely lad. The strangest thing of all is I saw Jess and he took me right back to when show business was about show business.
Yes.
And we were playing in the Showbiz 11 charity football team.
I remember it well. He was a goalkeeper, wasn't he?
Right. Well, we're all on the pitch this day. It was my first game with him. I hadn't played him. I mean, I played about a dozen games with him in all. And I said, so who's in goals then? And one of the lads said, oh, it's Jess Conrad. I said, well, where is he? He said, we're waiting to kick off. He said, oh, he said, he'll be here in a minute. He came out with full makeup on and a mirror in his top pocket of his shirt. And I couldn't believe it. I laughed till I fell on the floor. And that's Jess. That's Jess Conrad.
They took to you, the Americans, didn't they? They liked your humour, which was terrific.
Yeah, one of the mistakes Bob and I made, and we didn't realise we were making it, when we did the trumpet sketch, break off all the valves so that he can't play it. But it didn't show it because at that time, the band, which were all American boys, were howling laughing. So Bob turned round to him and I turned round and we both said, hey, you like the show, sit out front. So that was dropped.
Oh, right.
Because we involved the band and our backs were to the camera and us not thinking it were like a live cabaret show, we turned our backs to the camera. So, of course, John K. Cooper, who's a lovely lad, he said he had to drop it, you know. So he said, I'm sorry, boys. But still worked. It still worked.
Mick Miller was good too,
Mick,
wasn't he?
Mick was fantastic, Mick. He's been around a long time. Was rejected as a goalkeeper in his early days, bless him. And he's absolutely brilliant. Love him to bits.
Probably best thing that he was turned down as a goalkeeper because he's still working.
Well,
isn't he?
Exactly.
I want to go back to 1978, right? Just 2 miles down the road, San Elm Pavilion. You came with Gene Pitney.
Yes.
First time any of us over here had seen Cannon and Ball.
Right.
And the reception you got that night was fantastic.
I know. Yeah.
Within a few months, you were topping the bill everywhere.
Yeah. The strangest thing with the show business, or how it used to be, was you would start in a pub, then a working men's club, then a cabaret club, and if you were lucky, a theatre, and if you were more than lucky again, then television. So there were a stepladder. It was like an apprenticeship. And we met this man, God bless him, he's dead now, David Bell, who was head of light entertainment at LWT. And when we met him, he was just a manager of a singer in Scotland, who nobody knew in England because he was massive in Scotland, this little boy. And we went on supporting him in Scotland. And David Bell was stood in the wings when we came off and he just went, well done, boys. And that was it.
Right.
5 years later, he's head of LWT and we walk in. We've been signed up by LWT. We walk in and lo and behold, it's David Bell. He said, hello, boys. He said, do you remember me? I said, oh, my God. I said, you were at that theatre in Scotland. And the rest is history. And that was, you know, we had 13 years with our own stuff.
You were the biggest comedy duo sort of after Morecambe and Wise, weren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, Eric Morecambe, God bless him, paid a wonderful tribute to us. He was on the board of Luton Town Football
Club. Oh, yes.
And he always had, tell you this story because it's so funny. We walked into a room like this and Eric was there and we were just bubbling on TV. And Bobby walked in and all these kids are there, all on the floor, they're all playing. And he went like that, Bob. Whoa, rock on, tell me. Nothing. Eric Morecambe put his glasses to one side. Woof. So after we'd seen the game and everything like that, and he said to us, he said, don't let people do to you what they've done to me. And he was talking about his first heart attack that he had. Mm. And I said, I was sorry about that, Eric. And he said, do you know something? He said, you too. He said, there's not one other double act that Ernie and I are worried about. He said, but we're just beginning to get a bit worried about you two. That was a lovely compliment.
Telling me.
It was a beautiful compliment.
I came up to the Bradford Alhambra.
Oh, yeah.
Because Craig Douglas from the Isle of Wight,
yes,
of course, great mate of mine.
Yeah.
And you were in panto with him, or he was in panto with you.
He was, yeah.
And
he was.
I love that show.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I mean, I think even sort of, I don't know, even pantos seem to have changed a lot now. Well, me and Bob don't know half the people who are on with us anymore. They're from reality shows and stuff. And suddenly you go, oh, okay, well, yeah, nice to meet you. And then me and Bob will go, who is it? Because we don't watch that sort of stuff, you know. It's not that they've probably not got any talent. They probably have, but we don't know them.
You two began as a singing duo. Mm. And looking back, I still think The Wind Beneath My Wings that you two sang is the best version I've ever heard.
Well, to be honest with you, John, we recorded that song and it was climbing the charts, right? And a movie came out with Bette Midler. And she sang Wind Beneath My Wings.
She did, yeah.
And it knocked us out of the charts. Oh. And she got to number three with it.
Amazing.
Took us out the charts, yeah.
Talking about Panto, you're at Crewe this year, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. With apparently a nice lad. My wife said he went on to some talent show and sang with water coming down on him or something or whatever like that. I said, well, I said, honestly, love, I said, I don't know him. I said, you know, I said, he's probably a lovely lad. I said, but I said, no, I said, I don't know him. And I don't, and Bob doesn't. Crewe's a lovely little theatre. We've had 3 years there now. It's probably going to be our last there, and we'll probably move on to somewhere else or whatever, you know. Yeah.
I loved it when Bob kept phoning home, didn't he?
Yes, non-stop, non-stop. It was quite an amazing thing, because everybody kept saying to him, why do you keep phoning home? You know where your wife is. What's the matter with you? But he would insist on phoning home all the time, yeah. And then, of course, we had a sad day when all them people got killed, bless them, you know. We were out there when all them people got shot.
How did you feel when you first heard that? It must have knocked you off for six.
I know, John, but it was strange because the people in England knew before us because we were asleep, we were in bed and everything. Didn't hear anything, didn't hear any gunshots or anything like that. And the phones are going mad in the morning, saying, you know, my wife rang, are you safe? I said, what do you mean am I safe? What's wrong? She said, oh, she said there's 50-odd people been killed and so many wounded. And I said, oh, my God. And it was a very, very sad day. But everybody was in agreement, including the crew, because Stuart came and said, what do you want to do? Do you want to forget it and not do it now? Or do you want to carry on? And we all said the same thing. We cannot let people like him, who shot at them people, can't stop entertainment because of what he's done. I said, we've got to carry on. And we all agreed. And so we all carried on. They shut the strip down that night. It was pitch black. And from the house, from the balconies, you could see the lights in Vegas. And it was black. Absolute black. And it was a real sad evening. Following night, John, you'd be shocked when I tell you this. We went on the strip in a open-top vehicle with seats and we're there. And suddenly there's four-wheel drives, there's Harley's bikes with the flags as big as this wall fluttering from them, saying, keep your chin up, Murray, we can beat this. I mean, it was wonderful. I thought, my goodness, how marvellous to think that there's people picking them up, you know, after that tragedy.
As we speak today, I don't know whether you've heard the news, but there was a school in America, 8 more children have been shot today. Goes on and on, doesn't it?
I don't understand why they do guns like they do. I mean, I just don't get it. I mean, I saw a movie the other night and it was about the guns and stuff. And this guy was doing the guns. He was the main man of a big gun industry. And they took him to court, but it didn't make any difference. And it doesn't. I don't think it will ever change, John.
So, Cannon and Ball been going, since, 78, you really broke big, 79, didn't you?
Yeah, 55 years this year we've been together.
What I like about you two, because last time we met, you'd had a book out, and when you'd revealed that you'd fallen out, but you were back together as great mates, and I love that, because I think, you know, it's a story with a happy ending.
Yeah, but it's a story that even Bob and I now, we think back to it, because I often say, why did we fall out? And we both go, I don't know. And I think the biggest problem of all was we had two entourages of people driving us here, driving us there. Then they'd meet up their entourages and then they started tic-tacking. You don't know what, you won't believe what Tom's saying about you, Bobby. And da-da-da-da-da. And then what would them entourage would go back and say to Bobby, hey, I believe Tom is saying this and he's saying that. And we weren't saying anything about each other. And it was just 3 years. And when people say, oh, well, you fell out and didn't... Yes, we did, because we did TV shows. We didn't stop speaking on TV, did we?
No, exactly.
So it was a strange time, yeah. But out of 55 years, 3 years isn't too bad.
Telling me.
Yeah.
When Mike and Bernie Winters did a summer here in 78, they were not talking.
No.
And they finished together that they did their final act, and they still weren't talking together.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing, I know. Yeah, we saw Bernie in Yarmouth one summer when he was still alive, bless him, and he never even mentioned his brother at all.
Amazing. Just quickly, I know the tour is nearly over. Yeah. Seriously Dead, you've been touring, and that's sort of different again for Tommy Cannon.
Yeah, it's something that, to be honest with you, John, when I got the script, there was so much going on in my life and Bobby's. We were back and forward to London, shooting in front of green cloths so that they could have something to put in front of the Vegas thing. We had to go back again and do Lorraine. So we did four trips to London, five with Lorraine. And then in between that, my daughter got married. And so I hadn't even picked the script up. And I started to panic. Oh, my God. And when I looked at it proper, I thought, oh, my God. Look at all these words. I'm never going to remember it. And I went into a bit of a panic mode. But it worked out. You know, I got my head around it. And, it worked out. Still one or two little blips now and again. But that's that, with all our odds to it, that.
Right, so thanks, Tommy, for your time. On a busy day, you've got a show to do in a few minutes at Shanklin Theatre, and you're back here on August the 31st in the dressing room. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it. The beauty about it is that they actually get to a feeling of what happens in a dressing room before you go on, and then they actually see what you do. So you do the act, and, you know, Bob and I sometimes pinch 5 minutes and do 30 minutes or whatever it might be. But everywhere we've been with it, it's been fantastic. But I think it's like everything. The strangest thing of all we're finding in theatres is that, certainly in seaside places, it's just like the town's quiet and they're waiting for the holidaymakers to come, you know, to get some activity going. Because I've walked along the seafront today and it's beautiful. But it's so quiet, John, when you think, oh, man, there's no buzz at the moment, you know what I mean? So it might be a lot better when me and Bob come in.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying, yeah.
I love those old summer seasons. I know. Here on the Isle of Wight, and I used to go all around.
Yeah, I know.
Great Yarmouth, Blackpool,
everywhere. I mean, 25 weeks, you go 25 weeks to Torquay, 25 weeks to Bournemouth, 25 weeks here, 25 weeks everywhere in summer season. Now they've gone. Nobody does them.
When Charlie Williams did his summers at Sandown here on the Isle of Wight, in the day he used to wander along and talk to all the old people in the chairs and whatnot. Yeah. You come into my show, my flower and all that stuff.
I can believe it,
Tommy, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Looking forward to seeing you again August 31st.
Yes, and we're looking forward to coming as well.
And good luck.
Thank you.
Grateful thanks, as ever, to Tommy Cannon. If you want to see Cannon and Ball live between now and the end of the year, either in the dressing room or Cannon and Ball and Friends, they are visiting the following venues: Skegness, Bridlington, Leeds, the Royal Hippodrome, Eastbourne, Hastings, Wimborne, Weston-super-Mare, the New Theatre Royal, Portsmouth, Hereford, Darlington, the Viva Blackpool, Grimsby, Fleetwood, Halifax, Nuneaton, Chesterfield and Yeovil.
Who is it?
Who's who?
Him.
Who?
John Amam.
John Amam.
John
Amam Amam.
John Amam.
John Amam.
And never mind that. Hey, rock on, Johnny.
Hey, see you soon, Johnny, baby.
John Amam meets on Isle of Wight Radio.
It's great. He's got a swell personality. He meets and greets the stars with such amenity. Good enough to make you coming out of the street. John Hannah-Meets. That's right.
You've been listening to John Hannah-Meets, courtesy of Isle of Wight Radio. Don't forget to look at my website, johnhannam.com, for news of more interviews and how you might purchase my books. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye for now.